Blog Talk Radio.
Finally, I'm finally free. Finally, I'm finally me. Finally, I'm finally free.
This is a first ever for the Black Girl Nerds podcast, and that's why I'm crazy enough to do these shows live. But right now, our guest, Rebecca O'Neill, has not been able to show up yet. So we're going to wing it on this podcast until either Rebecca is able to sign on and come talk to us, and we'll figure out what we're going to try chat about on this podcast. But I do have Ashley to save me because I'm also down a co-host. So it would have been really boring just me talking on this podcast. So Ashley, thank you for jumping in and being on this podcast today.
It is my nerdy duty to do so, ma'am.
I text Ashley. I was like, I'm down a co-host and the guest hasn't shown up yet. What am I going to do? So thank you, Ashley. I really appreciate it. So we'll wing it. I have no idea what we'll talk about, but how about this? Those that are listening in, give us a call. Our number is 347-237-4616. And if you want to tweet with us still, feel free. The hashtag is BGN Podcast. So tweet about whatever. we'll do this sort of like a pop culture show, and we'll just talk about trending topics. I do want to make a couple of the announcements that I usually do on every podcast, and then Ashley and I will figure out something to chat about. But just make sure, guys, if you haven't done so already, and again, the support is always appreciated, we have merchandise that we're selling on Zazzle. So if you go to www.zazzle.com/blurredgasm, all of the merchandise that has the Black Girl Nerds logo is on there. So we have mugs, T-shirts, tote bags. We've got mouse pads. So it's a nice variety of things that you can have for your office or things that you can wear with you. And, again, all of the monies and the funds that are received from the Zazzle store goes into funding these podcasts. So thank you for your continued support, those who have already purchased merchandise, and continue to tweet those pictures. We really love seeing you guys share the love for BGN via Twitter. Also, congratulations to Jen, also known as JD Wattley, W-A-T-T-L-E-Y on Twitter. She is the winner of two tickets to see A Time to Kill on Broadway. So we had a contest about a week and a half ago about A Time to Kill. We were giving away Broadway show tickets, so Jen has won those, so congrats to you. And special thanks to Erica Mann, who collaborated with Black Girl Nerds, and also my partner through She Thrives to do this giveaway. She also helped coordinate the Romeo and Juliet on Broadway giveaway. So thank you, Erica, so much. I love being able to do giveaways on the site because I know that I love free stuff. So it's always fun to be able to to give away free stuff, and really good, you know, free stuff, not just, you know, eating stuff. Yeah, Broadway show tickets, that's a good thing. So thank you, Erica. Yeah. She's also known at the NYC Film Chick on Twitter. So that's her Twitter handle. Give a shout out to her. So, Ashley, go ahead and tell our audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, and anything that you're up to recently, any new projects that you're up to. Sound off.
Sure. Hey, everyone. Ashley, as Jamie mentioned, I'm mostly a critical writer. I do a lot of blogging. My field is mostly in horror. So horror films, I like to, you know, talk about them, critically analyze them, give them some clout. I also like to shout out, maybe unknown, mostly women horror filmmakers who don't get the attention they deserve. So I work with the Viscera Film Festival, and I'm also the sponsorship director for Women in Horror Month. So if you've got like a small business that you want to have gain, you know, international recognition with Women in Horror events that go on every February, you know, give me a shout out. My email is ashley@womeninhorrormonth.com, and, you know, we'll help you promote your business or your artistry or anything you're interested in. And if you have that, bloodlust for horror like I do, so.
Awesome. Good stuff. Good stuff. And Ashley, just a quick shout out to her. She is the most amazing person ever, I want to say. She is. And she's the copy editor for all of the published articles that you see on Black Girl Nerds. She copy edits all of those pieces. So big shout out to Ashley for the work that she does. She's very thorough, and she has a very quick turnaround with getting those pieces out. So thanks so much, Ashley, for just being the awesome person that you are.
You're very welcome.
So, okay, well, I guess I'll start by talking about something that's kind of cool and nerdy that I was doing right before this podcast aired. I was reading up on these comics that a PR company sent to me. They see the blog, and they see that it's very centric towards the African-American community and to nerds. So they emailed me about this new comic called Watson and Holmes. And if you haven't heard of the comic, it's actually very interesting. It's sort of an urban take on the Victorian classic Sherlock Holmes. So it's very gritty, very dark and brooding, but there's a lot of interesting action that takes place. It's a very complex, complicated story. And if you're into mysteries, and those kind of detective type stories. It's very much like that, but it's got a nice pop culture twist. They actually make a lot of pop culture references in the comic book series. So I'll be doing a review later this week about Watson and Holmes. And some of the writers of the comic book have done Wolverine. They've done X-Men. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we're going to see about getting some of those folks that created the Watson and Holmes comic book series on our podcast in November. So just wanted to give a shout out to Watson and Holmes because I just finished, they sent me 4 comics and I read all 4 of them in like an hour. It was great. It's one of those page turners where you just can't stop. And then you're like, I got to go to the next one. And they give you really great cliffhangers at the end of each issue. So you're really forced to just be like, yeah, I got to keep reading. So
is it more like a graphic novel or just like a straight comic book? Like, what do you feel are the differences?
I mean, you know what? I haven't read like a whole lot of graphic novels, so I can't do that comparison. You know, mm-hmm. I can't justify that comparison. But it feels like a comic to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's very similar to the Walking Dead comics. So would that be graphic novel oriented?
I've heard the Walking Dead be considered more of a graphic novel.
Okay.
And I could be totally wrong because my comic book IQ has been probably 15, 20 years. Don't slap me, nerds. I know, I understand. But it's just been so long that I've been really engaged with them. But, yeah, I think, like, graphic novels are pretty much, like, they have like, kind of like an ongoing series of a story. It's kind of like, it's what I would compare to a soap opera, but not really, of course, obviously. But, like, kind of just the structure of it.
Yeah, it's got the same structure as the Walking Dead comics. So if it is a graphic novel by those standards, then yeah, definitely. But it's
That's
really
pretty
good.
Unique.
Yeah.
So. I mean, yeah, I think the kind of the cultural twist with certain things that are commonly like, you know, like a Sherlock Holmes, you think of like a white guy, but then they, you know, it's transformed into a different setting that's more towards people of color or has people of color characters. That's an ongoing thing that I really dig that a lot of things,
yeah.
that a lot of artists do. I know I'm doing a series for Black Girl Nerds that's upcoming and talking about blaxploitation, but in a more specific sense, the horror element of blaxploitation that kind of came out in the 70s. And I think that's pretty cool. You know, I don't think those films are always good, but, you know, the fact that they exist and the fact that they do have a specific message, whether it's intentional or unintentional, the way the audience interprets it, I think is really cool, especially for African Americans who often feel underrepresented. So.
Yeah, definitely. And this is largely an African American comic book. It's got an African American cast, I guess, so to speak. It takes place in Harlem, New York. So it's the characters are very three-dimensional, very in-depth. The character of Sherlock Holmes, he's a private investigator, but, you know, he's like a cool private investigator type. And actually, the character John Watson, who's a doctor, he's a medical intern, he makes a reference to Denzel Washington in Training Day as his character. So it's
wow.
Very gritty. Yeah, very gritty, interesting story. It looks like we've got some callers, so could
oh,
be our
yay.
Guest. Could be guests, could be listeners. We'll see. So area code 312, you're on the air with Black Girl Nerds. What's your name? Where are you from?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, this is Rebecca. I was supposed to call in earlier.
Hey, Rebecca.
Okay, can I explain so I don't seem terrible? Okay. It is 6 o'clock Chicago time, and it is 7 o'clock your time. So I'm like, I got an hour. And then I get your message. I'm like, I do not have an hour, so here I am.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I've got to be more, I guess, make sure to really amplify the message of Eastern Standard Time when I send out those tweets and send emails.
Yeah.
Because I always
or you just call me slipping, basically.
Yeah, I'm always assuming everybody's on the East Coast, so I apologize if I didn't make that clear about East Coast time. But I'm glad you're on the show. Thank you for coming on.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Rebecca.
So, folks, we got our guest. I'm going to do a brief intro to Rebecca, and then we'll get started with our questions. Rebecca O'Neill is a Chicago-based writer and editor, as well as stand-up comedian, whose work can be read in Vanity Fair magazine, Gawker.tv, Splitsider.com, The Rumpus, and more. She is also a regular guest on Vocalo.org's Morning Amp and has appeared as a guest comedy commentator on WBEZ NPR's Morning Shift with Tony Sarabia. Rebecca was listed as one of Huffington Post's 18 funny women to follow on Twitter and curated a vintage black fashion blog that was featured on Jezebel.com. Rebecca is one of the newest cast members of the Chicago's historic Lincoln. Please give a warm welcome to Rebecca O'Neill, everybody. Thanks for coming on the show. Rebecca, you there?
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a slight delay also, but we're going to make it work.
Oh, okay. All righty.
Yeah.
Well, my first question to you is, how did you get your start in comedy, and how did you know that this was the right path for you?
Well, I started off writing about comedy, doing comedy journalism for a site called Splitsider.com in about late 2010, and I also wrote about comedy for Gawker. So I was kind of admiring from afar, seeing what was going on, and I just decided to give it a try one day. So that's how I started. And the Huffington Post thing happened before I ever started stand-up. So I would just tweet funny stuff that I just found interesting, and they put me on that list. So I'm like, people on the internet think I'm funny, so I'm just going to get on stage and see if actual people think I'm funny. And I just never stopped going. So that's how that started.
Awesome. Walk us through a day in the life of a comedian. What kind of challenges have you faced, and what has been rewarding for you in this line of work?
Oh, challenges. I'll just do a control day, like without the challenges and the rewards. Just like the average day is like hitting a lot of open mics. I just hit a year and a half in last month, actually. So when you're at that level, you're really lucky or blessed to get shows. So I get a good amount of shows, but mainly it's like hitting open mics, which is like ground zero for like comedy material. It's like an estuary of like jokes. So there's no barriers to entry. It's just anybody can show up and do whatever comes out of their mouth. So it gets weird sometimes. I'm not going to lie about that. It definitely can get odd because anybody can just stroll in off the street and put their name on the list. But on the other side of that, you get people who are, like, killing it in the comedy game right now, also coming out to work out their newest material, and everybody in between, like, the whole spectrum is there. So the good thing about the comedy scene in Chicago is that it's a big enough city where you can hit, like, 5 mics a night and really, like, hit the ground running, but it's not like as big as New York or LA where you'd be like lost in the pack somewhere. So that's my typical night, like either working out new material at a mic, or if I have shows, like trying to perfect my latest joke so I can go up at a showcase and really show them off for a good sized audience and like more established comics who I want to like put me on bigger shows. So that's a typical grind.
I know that Chicago isn't as big as New York or L.A., but I know Chicago is mostly known as far as comedy for Second City. Do you still feel Chicago is a big enough city to really give you the platform, you know, you desire? Not just the one you have now, but, you know, what are you looking more towards your future?
Well, I feel like you bring up Second City. That's a lot of the improv scene, and I don't know if people who aren't involved in comedy know how big the line of demarcation is between stand-up and improv, but it's like a huge chasm. Like, stand-up like, we're on stage by ourselves. We come up with our own material. We do it up there. It's a very solo, like, comedic path. Improv, on the other hand, is very group-oriented. It's that there's classes, there's a structure in place for how you move up and how you become successful, the avenues through which you can be discovered and, like, get on a show like SNL. So it's more of a rigid structure, and it's very community-oriented as far as goes. So Chicago is known for that. That's which is awesome. Like, I'm not super involved in the sketch or improv world. I'm a Second City ambassador right now, which is one of Second City's current outreach programs to get more people of diverse backgrounds involved in improv. But I'm a stand-up, like, through and through. Probably because it's very rewarding if you feel you have a strong voice and you have a lot to say that isn't sort of narrative based. It's very like point of view based from like one person's point of view instead of like a story point of view. So I feel like Chicago stand up scene is huge right now. We have a lot of people who are, they're not famous yet, who have left in the past 7 or 8 years, but they're like on the bubble, like people you'll know about in the next couple of years, like Hannibal Buress, TJ Miller, Dion Cole, Kumail Nanjiani, Pete Holmes, a lot of people who, like, you might not know now, but if you Google them, you're like, oh, I've seen that guy everywhere. So yeah, they're on the bubble. But the improv scene is definitely what we're known for more so. It's a comedy town, but not as much for stand-up as for improv.
We have a question on Twitter from Baking Your Noodle. That's one of my favorite Twitter handles on Twitter. Baking Your Noodle asks, Rebecca, do you think black women are MIA from mainstream comedy because women of color are the butt of a lot of jokes?
Well, that's interesting. If women of color are what from mainstream comedy?
MIA.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, as far as people who are very, very visible right now, I'd say yes. But on the conversely, like, I'd say people who are putting in work and who you will see in the next 5 years, I'd say there's going to be a lot of more women of color, people who don't, people who aren't just straight white males coming to prominence because of, just because of the people that I know who are putting in the work right now and the avenues that are opening up for more people of diverse backgrounds to be seen, and which I think is a later question you have, actually, the avenues by which people can create their own ways to be seen, there's going to be a lot more people of a lot more diverse backgrounds making it to the public eye because the people who typically make decisions aren't really controlling that as much as they used to in the entertainment industry. So we'll see what happens. But there's a lot of people on the level I'm at and, like, slightly above, there's a lot of very diverse people who are hilarious who, if you really look, actually, on the Internet and just search for who's out there doing great work and being funny and creating content, then you'll find us.
We mentioned, he had brought up earlier about the Huffington Post 18 Funny Women to Follow on Twitter. You were listed on there. Tell us more about that list, and what was it like receiving that kind of strong recognition from the Huffington Post?
That was a weird one. When that happened, this was probably a good year before I started stand-up. I was still a comedy journalist at that time. I was editor of one of Splitsiders' columns that was called the humor section. So think like McSweeney, Shouts and Murmurs, or like the New Yorkers, humor section. the New Yorker Shouts and Murmurs and McSweeney's Internet Tendency. So it was like that. And I had a lot of humorous content that I wanted to put out myself, and the way that I was kind of disseminating it quickly, like the most quickly, was through Twitter. So with tweet jokes, and I realized I was getting followers that were sort of high-profile people, like, because the humor section was publishing Conan writers, like Daily Show writers. We were publishing a lot of like high profile comedy writers, and I would get followers. They were getting a lot of attention and retweets. And then one day I realized I had like 400 extra followers. I'm like, that's not normal. So, and I found out it was just from this list I got put on alongside like Mindy Kaling and like people who read the Onion. And I'm like one of these things is not like the other, but I'm going to take it. And now I got to be extra funny because like all these eyes are watching. So that literally came out of the blue, but I probably went from like a couple hundred followers to like over 1,000 overnight because of that list. So yeah, it was a big push to actually get me to have the confidence to go on stage and tell my jokes. So, yeah, that was great.
Isn't that funny how that's all it takes is one retweet to get so
really
many followers?
The internet is true, man. Like, you never know where they're going to come from.
It's crazy because that's what happened to the Black Girl Nerds Twitter account when Shonda Rhimes started following us. And
yeah.
It was on Scandal Night. And she retweeted something I put out on Twitter on Scandal Night, and I'm not exaggerating.
Oh.
I got 1,000 followers in one night just
That's
from her
crazy.
Retweeting.
That's crazy.
I know.
It's influencers. You never know when it's going to come, but yeah, now you probably got to be on point. Like, I can't be tweeting anything crazy now because everybody's looking.
Right. Everybody's looking. Now, there was a post that I wrote this week, and it got some controversy on Twitter as well. A lot of folks are tweeting about it now that want me to ask about it, so I want to bring it up. And recently in the news, there was some hiring that happened in Saturday Night Live. I believe it was 6 cast members that got hired, 5 of them all male, 1 female, but all white. And over the past 40 years, SNL has been on the air, close to 40 years anyway, and there's only been 4 Black women who have been cast on the show as series regulars. So my question to you is, what are your thoughts about the lack of representation of Black female cast members, and why do you suppose that is?
There's a lot going on there. First, I'll say that I know that the people who were hired are hilarious. One dude, Brooks Whelan, is just such a creative guy. He's a stand-up who also writes sketch, and he is, like, insanely creative, and he definitely needs this outlet, and I'm really glad he's got this exposure. So I'll say that first. Next, I'll remind everybody that, again, I'm not really in the improv world. I'm not super plugged into that scene. And finally, I'll say that I believe that SNL's problem and the problem of a lot of places like institutions like that have been in place for so long is that they have a very rigid method of finding talent. Second City finds talent through Second City organizations like Second City here in Chicago, their training center. They find writers who have been in their conservatory for years and have poured some of them tens of thousands of dollars into years and years of classes and have worked their way up to the top in order to be seen by, you know, executives from NBC and other places. They go on sitcoms or they go on the SNL or they go on the wherever. But in order to even be seen by them, you have to have poured years and money into their organization. They also go through a place called UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade, IO, which is Improv Olympic, Annoyance, other places that are pretty much, they have different philosophies, but the idea is the same. You put years, you put money in order to grow the talent that they're looking for and the skill set that they're looking for, but you also have to have a ton of resources that not a lot of people have. So the pool that they're choosing from is already a small group of people who have those resources to be able to do that, which I think limits who they're even looking at. So the hire of someone like Jay Farrow, who came from the internet, was, first of all, shocking, because not just because he's a Black guy, but because of how they found him. Like, it's unheard of, honestly, to have them hire someone who didn't go through their, you know, old, I won't say an old boy system, because anybody can start, granted they have those resources. Now that I've said that, I'm going to remind everybody about the Second City Outreach Program again, which is a fairly new thing. Which I'm an ambassador for that, which basically one of my jobs is to spread the word about it and let people know that Second City here in Chicago and I believe elsewhere is making a concerted effort to reach people of more diverse backgrounds. There's scholarship programs. One of them where you can apply is open registration. You can go look up. Oops. Did you guys hear my alarm? Okay.
No, we're still here.
Okay, so you can apply, and if you have, like, a clip and a headshot, not even, like, a professional headshot, but just a clear shot of yourself, I don't know what the whole application process is. They are offering, you know, tuition assistance to people who they believe have promise and talent so that you can get in the door there where it would otherwise cost you literally hundreds or thousands of dollars to even get to the conservatory level where being seen would be an option. So there's a lot. There's a lot going on that's been in place for years that's keeping Second City from becoming more diverse, and that's probably ground zero for that problem, which they're aware of, and they're, you know, gratefully trying to stop or improve that situation.
Yeah, that's good to know, because I was going to ask you, you know, if you thought it was a little bit more difficult for women, and especially minority women, to kind of get their foot, to even get their foot in the door, or even be considered for an audition for Second City or any other places, or even just even stand-up clubs. I know you're more into doing stand-up. Have you found it more difficult? I mean, I'm not asking this, you know, as in a way to kind of assume that it's more difficult, but I just...
Yeah.
To knowing the experience of a woman of color who is into stand up or who is into comedy, what's for you personally, what's kind of been the experience or the trajectory to get up on stage?
Well, the great thing about stand up, I'm going to say the good things and then I'm going to qualify them. The great things about stand up is that, again, there are no barriers to entry. Anybody can walk into an open mic, get up and do their open, how much ever time there's allotted. Most of the time it's like 4 to 5 minutes. If you're funny, you will be noticed. If you're funny and you put in the work, it's pretty difficult. It would have to be a concerted effort for people not to notice you being funny on a regular basis at open mics. In a scene like Chicago, where there are probably, I'd say, 200 to 300 people on the scene who are working regularly, and it's a revolving door. Once you hit a certain level, there's a ceiling here. You move to New York or L.A., part of your career, and then new people come in. It's kind of like a school. Like, there's new freshman class and the seniors graduate. So of those 200 or 300 rotating people, if you're among them, if you're hardworking, and if you're funny, it's impossible for you not to move up. It's pretty impossible, regardless of race or gender. That said, it's still a male-dominated field. It's like, just numbers-wise, comedy is mostly made up of men. The comedy scene in Chicago is unfortunately extremely segregated because it's just a product of the makeup of our city. The south side of Chicago, where I live, is predominantly black. The north side is more diverse, but I'd say the comedy scene is predominantly white or caters to white audiences. That's more accurate. The south side comedy scene caters to more urban rooms, we'll call them, I guess, and the north side comedy scene caters to more just white or diverse audiences. So that's another thing to contend with. Like, if you want to do urban rooms, which I try to do both as much as possible, you're on a totally different side of the city, which is more difficult to get to. But on the north side, where I say I do, I probably say 70% of my comedy I do on the north side of Chicago. Everybody gets a fair shot, but numbers-wise, it's mainly white guys. A lot of people do a really good job of making sure that everybody who's being funny and who's, you know, putting in the work is getting booked fairly, but it is very much a meritocracy. It is also very much like people who know each other and have more time in get more work. So I haven't had a problem there. Things have kind of been going quickly for me, so I have no major complaints there. But there are things that are different for women in comedy than for men, like 100%, like dealing with jokes or comments or people bringing you up saying, like, everybody ready for a lady tonight? Who wants to hear from a lady? The next comedian is a female. Like, nobody says that about, like, this next comic is a guy, everybody, you ready for that? Like, it's a default setting. Like, nobody you don't have to prep anybody for that. So that's like the least bothersome thing about being a female comic. Then sometimes it's just comments on your appearance that are unsolicited, you didn't ask for. Sometimes people can be harassing in a joking way. They think it's all in fun, and you're not into that at all. And you just, because you're a comic and you're supposed to be tough, you have to deal with that in kind and throw something back their way just to let them know, like, that's not going to fly. So just kind of like no crying in baseball. Like, you just have to be as tough as they are, honestly, because you're outnumbered and you have to be just as talented and just as, like, rough around the edges to kind of stay in it with them. And to combat that, there are rooms in Chicago and elsewhere where there are only female comics allowed, and there are shows where they only book female comics, which I really appreciate that being something that's available, especially for, like, newer female comics who may not be as used to this environment, which can be really harsh, like super-duper harsh. But I do think that there are people who play only to those audiences and only to those rooms, and I think that that can kind of make for, like, a comedian who, if thrown into a situation that is more abrasive, isn't ready for it. Like, so it's kind of like, it's a good thing and a bad thing, because it's kind of like playing bowling with bumpers on and then trying to play, like, bowl for real. Like, it's just not going to prepare you fully for what happens, so... That's kind of the female comic experience from what I know so far.
Awesome. Well, we've got a couple of folks calling in. I know that our listeners either like to listen in on the phone or they're calling in to talk to us. So I'm just going to put you through, and if you do want to listen in, I'll keep you on the line. So caller 111, you're on the air with Black Girl Nerds. What's your name and where are you from?
Hi, I'm just listening in.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thanks.
All right, and then we've got someone else on the queue. 111, you're on the air with Black Girl Nerds. What's your name and where are you from? Hello, hello. Okay, listen it in. And that's cool. And if you do want to talk to us, guys, just tweet me your area code. So just use the hashtag BGM podcast and tweet your area code. The number is 347-237-4616. Okay, so I know we talked about, you know, comedy kind of still being a large part of the old boys network, and that there are spaces for women that play to women. Do you think that there's more female comics out there than what we're led to believe? Because it seems like we are still a minority in the world of comedy, but is that true, or in fact, we are the minority?
Well, just numbers-wise, I think in a lot of the bigger markets, Chicago, New York, L.A., and then there's, like, really awesome scenes in, like, Austin and some other cities. Numbers-wise, there are fewer female comics, but there are still tons of us. Like, in Chicago, there are so many active, hilarious female comics that they're working right now, and they're like, they're putting in the work. You probably have never heard of them, but I mean, I could probably name several dozen, like over 50 for sure, who, you know, if they're not, you know, seen soon, like something is horribly wrong. Like, there are so many women, just it's hard to describe the how a comedy scene works, because when people think of, like, comedy, they think of who they know of already, but there's so many people, like, toiling in obscurity right now who are just killing it every day. Oh, goodness. I've done it again. Okay. They're just toiling away in obscurity, just hitting small shows, like free BYOB shows in the city for, like, people in dive bars, and they're putting in the work that it takes to be, like, seen on television or booked on shows in New York and L.A., and they're killing it. So I say, just numbers-wise, there are probably thousands of people across the country and other places that women who deserve to be seen and are, like, putting in the work comedically. As far as people who will probably you'll see soon, we call it graduating. People who've left Chicago recently for coasts, who are now kind of emerging. Among them, Cameron Esposito, who is one of the biggest comics here in Chicago, left for L.A. last year, and she just did her first set on Craig Ferguson a couple nights ago, and she like blew it out of the water. Jay Leno was the guest, and she was called over to the couch with Leno and Ferguson, and it was like it was an amazing thing because she was. Again, we refer to them as classes. She was an upperclassman when I started last year. And she hosted this mic, Cole's Open Mic here in Chicago. And I just looked up to her so much. Like, she's a lesbian. She's a woman. She's very empowering. And she was very positive towards other female comics. And she was a really big inspiration for me. And when she moved to L.A., I'm like, you know, I hope things go well. Because they don't always when entertainers move to coast to get more exposure. Sometimes those kind of cities can, like, eat you up and spit you out. But she's been killing it out there. So I say look out for her. Another recent graduate of Chicago is Beth Stelling, who's been on Conan recently. And she's had a lot of television gigs. So in the next couple of years, she'll probably be more – those two will probably be more prominent on television and people who are just top of mind in pop culture. So, look out for those two. And, well, Evan moves next, I guess. So, yeah.
We got another question on Twitter from Baking Your Noodle. She asked, could a black woman challenge the system with socially critical comedy like Chappelle, Murphy, or a Pryor?
Yeah, absolutely. They do. Well, the person I'm going to bring up actually isn't black, but she's a woman of color. Aparna Nancherla is on W. Kamau Bell's show right now, and I interviewed her for Splitsider. Again, I started with comedy journalism. I interviewed her several years ago, before she had a television credit, and she talks about race, she talks about women's issues, and not even like in sort of in-your-face way. She just talks about her own experiences being a woman of color, and that is you know, she's risen to prominence because of that, and she's amazing, and just even as a woman of color, no matter what you say on stage about your experience, it's going to be seen as like somehow forwarding women's issues. If I just talk about dating on stage, like I'm talking about a black woman's experience because I'm a black woman and that's my experience. So I say anybody, any of us who makes it honestly and we're on the right side of the argument, I'd say a lot of pandering does happen, which, you know, there's not much you can do about that. But any of us who makes it is a victory, honestly. There are a lot of more political comedians who are, I'm trying to think of like a black female comedian who actively tackles topics like that. There's one named Sashir Zamata, who is in New York. She talks a lot about race and like her experiences in entertainment, dealing with like people, kind of like a Hollywood shuffle type thing. She does voiceover work. She has jokes about how people tone the black stuff up, and that sounds horrible, but she makes it hilarious because that's what she's experienced. And you got to mind everything you go through for jokes when you're in this line of work. So yeah, there's a lot of us, and I think there are a few who you'll probably see more from very soon.
We also have a question from Jewel757 Live. She asked, "Do you work clean, and what are the advantages and disadvantages for women?"
Do I work clean? I can work clean. I work me right now is what I'll say. I'm not a filthy comic by any stretch of the imagination, but I am me, and in my life, everything I go through isn't squeaky clean. Everything I say, the way I express myself isn't squeaky clean, so I try to express myself on stage how I express myself in life, and that's just, I try not to filter myself. For certain shows and for certain opportunities, you do have to prepare, like, how many ever minutes they're looking for clean material, which is pretty easy to scrub what I do with from any, like, profanity or, like, sexual references. So every comedian, unless they're, like, a comedian who actively works clean, they can work clean if they want to make any money. So that's the answer to that question. Everybody can pretty much do that. And advantages and disadvantages for women was the other part.
Yeah. What are the disadvantages
okay.
and the advantages?
Disadvantages for women, there are fewer of us. So, again, I've spoken about that. I don't know if anyone is consciously in the Chicago scene, because I know everybody here that's working and doing comedy, and I get booked a lot here. So for a year and a half in, I have no complaints at all about what's going on comedically. But because we are outnumbered, it can seem like sometimes you look at a lineup and it's like, that's all dudes, that's all white dudes. Why do you need 5 white dudes on the show? Like, who's going to see that? But for the most part, because most shows here in Chicago are booked by comedians, people book the people they want to see. So I book a show myself, and I pride it on being super diverse. Every type of person, every type of comedic point of view, and there are dozens of shows like that. So that's kind of a both sides of the coin thing. Advantage, I'd say one advantage to being a black female comedian here in Chicago, especially working the north side, is that I do stand out. The scene is mostly white guys, so when I came along, me and a friend of mine who's also a black woman, her name is Sonya Denise, she's hilarious, we started around the same time, and really there were no black female comics on that side of the scene doing what we do. Like, we are black girl nerds, and we are talking about our experiences from that point of view because that's who we are, and I don't think people on that scene have really seen that before we showed up, so both of us have kind of had a fast track because I think it was a point of view that people hadn't seen and they didn't know they were looking for. So that would be one advantage, that there aren't many black female comics who are talking about things the way we are talking about things. So it is a great way to get seen, to be unique, and to be like, anybody who's being 100% themselves is going to advance quickly. So that's what I'd say about that.
As far as I have a couple of questions, but I think the one that is most pressing right now for me is, I'm thinking about, you know, all the stand-up comedians who tend to branch off and do different things. You talked about doing a lot of comedy journalism. What else do you feel is a part of your public persona as far as you being a stand-up? Like, what else do you aspire to do, and or what else are you doing?
Well, just me personally, my background's in writing, so that was my first love before I even knew I ever wanted to perform, so I'm always going to fall back on that, and that's how I make money also. I'm still a freelance writer, so I'm always going to do that, and because I started off writing about comedy, if this all falls to the ground, which hopefully it won't, I'm going to continue writing about comedy because I'm a comedy nerd. I've collected comedy albums since I was a child, like, I like vintage records, and that's just what I love to do. So I'm always going to write, and I'm always going to do comedy journalism. But before I knew I wanted to perform, I wanted to be sort of behind the scenes and maybe write for a television show. And I did, I was in the packet process for a while for a late night show. That didn't end up panning out, but I would love to try that again, to submit to a late night show or write for a sitcom. And the good thing about now and this 2013 is all the avenues there are to get yourself seen. Like, if you can create, you know, interesting, compelling, or funny content, like, it's kind of like if you build it, they will come type steal the dream thing. Like, if you create something, like, the people who are into what you're doing will find you. And, so I guess putting out more web content. There's so many ways to get seen now. I try to do a lot of funny tweets. So, yeah, anything you can do to get extra eyes on your work is brilliant. There's also, like, things people don't think about, like Reddit. There's a subreddit called Stand Up Shots, where you just post a picture of yourself with your joke on it, and I've got like dozens of followers from that. So it's kind of like throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks and who is going to cling to what you're saying the way you're saying it and say, yeah, I can relate to that, and then come on board. You just kind of snowballing, and whoever is along for the ride, then yeah, I'll have them. So basically trying everything creatively.
That kind of filters into what you mentioned, kind of filters into the other question I had that was pressing for me, is I wanted to know, you know, you describe yourself as a comedy nerd, like who were your inspirations? What albums did you collect and do you listen to over and over again? And who's been your inspiration to get up on that stage?
Man, I don't even know where I would start with that. I guess I'll start at the beginning and make it short. I've loved comedy since I was a very little kid. My dad liked comedy. He listened to a lot of this guy named Mitch Hedberg, who was like a one-liner comic who died a while ago. And so I was very into like his, Mitch Hedberg was, again, one-liners. He was like tweeting on stage before there was Twitter. Very short jokes. His joke structure was very strong. Like, a lot of people are storytellers, but Mitch Hedberg was just like, here's the setup, here's the punchline, here's the joke, now you laugh. Like, so that was ingrained in my head as like a hard joke structure was always ingrained in my head. So that hasn't left. Then as a child, I wasn't really allowed to watch them, but I used to sneak and watch Comic View on BET every night. Like, I watched this every
night. We all did.
Night. Mm-hmm. We all did. Like, even if you're not a comedy nerd, like, I wasn't allowed to watch it because they were talking about sex and they were cursing all the time and doing the hump in the stool and all this stuff. But I watched it anyway because I couldn't help it. And I got in trouble one day at school, actually. There's this guy named Dion Cole who is super famous now. He's also from the south side of Chicago where I'm from. He had a joke about, he got in trouble. He said something crazy in front of his mom. He got in trouble. He was like, well, the devil's been taking over my soul all week. I got to school. I got in trouble, and I quoted him. The devil's been taking over my soul all week. And I got in so much trouble. I was at a Catholic school, and they're like, this child is possessed. And I told them, like, I saw it on Comic View. Fast forward to about 2011, I got the opportunity to interview Dion Cole right after he got hired for Conan. And I told him that. He was like, nobody has quoted that bit to me in, like, 10 years. Like, are you crazy? So, like, it's, like, just becoming, like, being such a fangirl and then writing about it. And then, like, it was inevitable that I was going to throw myself into it. So I loved Comic View, and I love Mitch Hedberg. I just feel like a lot of my influences are super eclectic because once I started to form my own taste as an adult, I was very much into, like, wordy comedians, because I'm a writer, like, language is so important to me. People who are really, like, kind of like floral language, people like Paul F. Tompkins or Patton Oswalt, they're huge influences because they express themselves so precisely and so hilariously, and that's really what I love about comedy. Like, you get to say whatever you're thinking and you get to express it the way you want to express it to get the audience to not only understand how you think and how you feel, but to get them to laugh at it. And that's like, it's basically magic what they do. So those are big two for me, and Dion Cole and Mitch Hedberg. So, yeah. And Maria Bamford, I'm going to throw her in because she was a late discovery for me. I discovered her probably 2009 or something. And the way she talks about super personal issues, like depression or just things that I thought were maybe off limits on stage, she talks about them like it's no big deal, and I love that. And my style is super confessional too, so I'm going to add her to the mix.
So I'm going to combine these last two questions. We've got two questions from Twitter. Blurdology asks, there are so many comedians taking to the internet to create their platforms. Do you have any internet favorites? And then Baking Your Noodle asks, what do you think about Issa Rae's Awkward Black Girl, which both of those are very cohesive.
Well, when the person asked who was my favorite, I was going to bring up Issa Rae. Like, she's fantastic. Fantastic. When I saw the videos, I actually heard about it from my aunt, who is, when your older family members recommend something, like, okay, I'm sure this is going to be a disaster. So she recommended it to me. This was when there was only, like, two episodes. And I watched it, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, I have been waiting to see this. Like, when I saw it, I was so excited that there was an awkward black girl being funny in a way that everybody can relate to and that people were watching it. Like, I was so happy when I saw that. And fast forward to now, when she's got all these opportunities and she's riding with, like, the biggest people in entertainment, like, that's a victory for all of us. Like, I think she's amazing. And she created that opportunity for herself. Nobody gave that to her. She wanted to do something. She did it. And now it's a thing. Like, she did that. So, I mean, props to her 100,000%. Like, that's just, like, the power of the internet right there, because she wanted to do something. People were like, we've been waiting for this. I don't even know if we knew we were waiting for this, but you gave it to us. And now she is that she is the HBIC right now. So congrats to her. Yeah, that's my favorite. That's the, those two questions in one answer.
I see another question on Twitter from Jewel757L. She says, do you feel that there's a line that comics can't cross? For example, the Cheryl Underwood hair controversy.
Oh, hold on one second. I think I thought my phone was going to do the alarm thing again. No, I don't think there's anything that comics can't talk about on stage. The only thing that comics can't do on stage is not be funny. If you're being funny, I think you could talk about anything. I talk about every part of my life on stage. The Cheryl Underwood controversy, I would argue that the larger issue there was was that it wasn't as funny as it could have been. And I'm a fan of her earlier work. I watched her on Comic View growing up. Her comments weren't as funny as they could have been, I don't think. And also it wasn't prepared material. She was just kind of winging it. And as a woman who I've been natural since, like, freshman year of high school. I'm 26 now, so I took umbrage with her comments. But if you're – I don't think there's any line you can't cross, any topic that's off limit. I would say that if you're on the wrong side of the argument, like, there's been a lot of controversy about rape jokes recently. If the joke is at the expense of, like, a powerless party, then you can say whatever you want, but don't expect there not to be backlash. So, yeah, that's pretty much how I feel about off-limit topics in comedy. Say whatever you want, but if you're being a jerk, like, people are going to comment on it.
Yeah.
Have you ever received any backlash from, like, hecklers? Have you ever had that experience doing stand-up?
Yes. Absolutely. Hecklers. If you have been doing it for any amount of time, you're going to get a heckler. I got my first heckler probably 2 months into comedy, and it wasn't that bad. It was a guy. It was an open mic at a bar. It was late. People were drunk. It was like a dive bar. The guy had on a Harley jacket, and I just said, hey, Harley jacket, and enough. That was enough for him to stand up and be like, just flip out. And I'm like, what just happened? He stood up and was like, the second you walked in, I knew you were going to talk about me. I'm like, didn't even know I was doing comedy when I walked in, so maybe calm down. But, it doesn't take much to incense people who are already ready to start something. But it's a skill that you learn to, like, you hone that skill the longer you do it. Like, now I've hosted, like, I've been doing it long enough to shut people down. Like, either you start off polite, and if that doesn't work, you have to just shut them down because they will derail a show with just reckless abandon. They don't care. So hecklers, it's just something we are all going to deal with as comedians. It's inevitable, unfortunately.
Do you feel your strategy is like playing the dozens with a heckler, or is that what you mean by shut them down? I'm curious.
It gets there. The thing that a heckler doesn't understand is that if you have a microphone, they can never win. Like, it's never going to end well for them. They're either going to end up kicked out or humiliated or somewhere in between. Like, at the very worst, they're going to be, at the very least, they're going to be silenced. At the very worst, they're going to be embarrassed with whoever they came with. At the very, very worst, they're going to be thrown out of the establishment. So, like, my best advice is if you're at a comedy show, speak when spoken to. Don't make this hard for yourself. Because that's what you, like, as a comedian, what you learn to do. Again, there's nobody teaching you any of this, but what you learn to do is handle it. You got to handle it because you're up there by yourself. If you don't handle it, nobody's going to handle it for you. So you got to keep your material coming out, and if there's somebody trying to stop it, you got to stop them first. So it's just kind of one of those things that you wish you didn't have to deal with, but you absolutely will somewhere along the line a lot.
Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on our show tonight. We're getting to the end of the podcast. Where can our listeners find out more about what you're doing, your tour dates, your shows? Give us your shout-outs.
Okay. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Becca_O'Neal, O-N-E-A-L, like Shaquille. There's no apostrophe on Twitter, though. And there I have a link to my shows. So it's also just my Tumblr. It's BeccaO'Neal.tumblr.com/show. So if you're in Chicago, you can see all my shows. I have pretty much my dates lined up until early November. So you can just check those out, pop into a show, be like, hey, what up? So That's that whole story, basically. That's where you can find me on the internet.
Well, thank you for coming on to the show. Thank you, Ashley, for co-hosting at the last minute. Really appreciate you saving the day there. Next Sunday, guys, we will have a 90-minute podcast on Scandal. So the new season starts Thursday, October 3rd. We'll have guest Makisha Madden-Toby. Makisha Madden is a writer for MSN-TV, and we'll also have Tangela Eckhoff, who's a social media superstar and resident expert on all things Scandal. So definitely tune in next week, Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Great show, guys. Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Take care. Bye, guys.
Thank you.